And we are live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the Banff Podcast. Tonight, we just got a whole bunch of folks from the Battle Lords of the 23rd Century here to tell us what they're doing right now. But before we get to their no doubt interesting stories, I am contractually obligated to play you this intro music, so please indulge me. Sorry about that, but that's what assures you, gentle listener, that you're listening to an artisanally crafted, custom-made, quality podcast. And now, without further ado, Battle Lords guys, let's introduce Ray Dave. Yo, tell me. Good to see you, sir. Sorry, that was my kid.
Oh, no worries. How's it going?
It's all right. Kurt, good to see you, sir.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Tony, should we call you Tony or Executor?
Tony's fine.
All right, sweet. And last but not least, my co-host, Walter Billiard.
Hey, Walt. Damn well better call me Executor.
All right. So you guys are on Kickstarter right now?
We do indeed have a Kickstarter going for fully armored guns, armor, all kinds of cool toys.
Well, tell us about that. What is this book?
So this book is in the same kind of a mode as a similar book that's been in past editions of the game. It was called Lock and Load. In this case, it's a little bit different than the normal Lock and Load. It's not just a straight up reprint with adjustment for rules. We've actually taken a look at the weapon systems, tried to fill in some gaps. So there are new weapons in there. There are a lot of new ideas in there that we're adding in. Kurt may want to jump in with his favorite later, but we'll get to that, I'm sure, in due time. So it's a lot of different what we wanted to do, because the first go around on this was the core rules. The core rules we were trying to give everyone, if you will, first level to 20th level gameplay. That didn't give us a lot of options. So it was, you've got your really, really cheap gun in a type of weapon series, like a cheap laser pistol or a cheap plasma weapon or a cheap, what we call archaic powder in the game. And then you have a high-end one and maybe something in the middle, and that left us with a lot of gaps. Same thing for armor, same thing for equipment. So there's a lot of options in the core rules, but there's not much granularity if you want to kind of move up. It's harder to have a lot of flexibility of choices. So the goal here is to really expand the options for a player, let them trick things out as they wish in a lot of new and fun ways.
Okay, sweet, sweet. Is this what rule set this one for? Is this for the original or is this for the Savage Worlds adaptation?
This is for the original.
All right, cool, cool. Just making sure. Man, you guys always have the best art. I think I've seen this piece before.
Thank you.
But it always gets me. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, she's one of our faves.
We wanted the book to be as much art book as role-playing game. We figured if anything, it'd make a great coffee table book.
Now, did you guys get to go to the range and blow off a bunch of ammo as like preparation to get ready for this?
Well, Tony does that fairly regularly. I get it a little bit more sporadically since I get to do it with the scouts. We get to teach them how to shoot and stuff. So it's kind of a little bit more haphazard and a lot more, keep it safe type attitude there. So,
hey, I just did that with my kid 2 weekends ago. We went to a Cub Scout day camp here in Colorado, where they did nice. BB guns. Yeah, yeah. We had a good time. So, wow, this is another amazing piece. Look at that.
I was going to say, I hope you didn't use any of the hardware from Battle Lords of the 23rd Century, because, that could get a little weird.
Letting 15-year-olds shoot a pulse weapon is just not a good thing.
And finding a backstop for that is a little tougher.
Dirk just doesn't seem to do it.
So this poor guy, Edward X Hands here, how does he feed himself?
Oh, his hands can turn into whatever he wants them to be at that particular moment.
That opens up a world of possibilities. Okay, cool.
Yes.
That works.
You too can be a skewer on his arms.
Which he can subsequently electrify.
And then he's cooked you so he can eat you.
That's right.
You guys have put a lot of thought into this, and I like that. So you guys have got 18 days left to go, and looks like you're doing pretty well so far. We're over halfway there, 13 out of a 16.
We're 80% funded.
Yeah. So I think you're probably safely in the home stretch now. Looks like things are going to be good. Have we started thinking about stretch goals?
We've got several stretch goals listed for the campaign. If you are on a pledge level that has a physical item, like books, The first stretch goal is everybody gets free Battle Lords dog tags. We've got another stretch goal further down the road where everybody gets free Battle Lords toe tags, which are fun to give out to players at the table when that character doesn't make it. Other stretch goals include more art for the book. And the one I think a lot of people will be interested in, there's actually a stretch goal in there where if we hit it, every pledge level that has stretch goals will receive every single PDF that we have for the prior editions of the game. It's something like 20 PDFs.
That's insane. Hey, I know that guy.
I know that guy too. So sweet.
So tell us a little bit about this badass armor that we're seeing on Mike. Can you scroll down a little bit?
Yeah, you got it.
Probably about halfway down the page, you're going to see the cover of Fully Armored. It's going to have a blue battle suit on it right in the middle. If you can make that. Yeah, there we go. Can you tell us a little bit about how battle suits change the environment of playing the game?
Yeah, when we did the cover for Fully Armored, we wanted that cover's done by Kiki Kernia, who does all of our covers for any book that we goes through traditional printing press process. Kiki does all of them, and we wanted her to do something that really showed how far you could take it with what's in Fully Armored. So what's pictured there is essentially a suit of mechanized battle armor, which augments your strength and agility, probably to superhuman levels, depending on the model you get. It's also equipped with a Mars flight system, so you can fly around. Anti-missile system, reflex missiles. It's loaded with multiple firearms. There's actually on our Twitter, somebody asked what it was, and just from the exterior appearance, I listed every armor option that particular suit had. I'll have to dig out that tweet again. But the armor in the game, even in the core rules, is fully customizable, and Fully Armored just gives you that many more options to choose from.
Now, when you start getting into things like the drones that you're seeing in that image, how does that work? Like in the game rules, does the player control that? Is that something that's controlled by the GM?
Dave, you want to take that one?
Sure. Yeah, so the drone rules, so just kind of taking a step back, one of the fundamentals of the game, created by Larry Sims, Army veteran, he wanted to really encapsulate the need for a bunch of people who come together to form a unit to become that unit. And really part of the experience of getting together and being in that unit is learning to rely on each other. You may not always trust each other, particularly if it's that Fentari over there, because he really does want to get you. But you have to trust that you'll work together to get through the mission. And then after the mission, you got to keep a closer eye on him, because now he knows he's safe. And so we're trying to keep that gameplay focused on the player interaction and the player activity. So actions are really the mechanic we use in the game for this. And so the players can either choose to be directly activating what's going on there, or they can provide commands via voice, basically typically a free action if it's a pretty straightforward thing like get him or shoot him, potentially a longer action if it's, hey, go fly behind him and shoot him in the back, right? If it takes longer, the GM may say that's more than just a free action. And so then at that point, it's kind of released on its own command. And usually they have what we call a PAI. It's not a fully, it's an AI that's got limitations, let's put it that way. It's got blocks. Think like Asimov's rules. You can't allow a human to come to harm. That kind of thing, but a little more extreme. So in the Battle Lords backstory, full AIs are not generally allowed to wander around wherever they can go.
I have that same restriction, but that's for other reasons.
like when he draws on the walls.
Let's go with that. I like that. Who is this guy here in the bottom here? This demon samurai guy you got.
That is a Eridani in ceremonial armor, sporting the dreadlocks of glory. Eridani hairstyles denote not only their rank, but also their prowess in battle. So this particular guy is not somebody you'd want to mess with. Once Eridani sword saints reach a certain rank, they're required to get a suit of ceremonial armor. And that's what's pictured there. That was kind of a neat story. We had our art director, again, that's a piece by Kiki, talked to Kiki, and she drew in elements from armor all over the planet, our planet, Earth. So there are elements not only of samurai armor in there, but of armor and protective gear and equipment worn by American Indians, traditional African fighting gear, and they're all in there. And she took elements from most of them and integrated them into that suit to get something that was unique.
Right on. Sweet. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. You were talking earlier about like old powder weapons. What does old powder weapons do against some of these battle suits? Like, is there even a chance, or is it like somebody walking up to an M1 Abrams and, you know, like kicking it?
So the weapon systems in the armor are really kind of span three groups from an armor perspective. We call it body armor, which starts even as simple as just basically a flak jacket, all the way through pretty heavy stuff. What we probably consider like a, keep me honest, your Tony, class 2, class 3 armor.
Yeah, it may probably even better.
Yeah, and then from there we go into heavy armor, which basically be kind of like an APC. It's light arms immune. Heavy arms can still affect it in our terms. So a heavy machine gun, a modern day heavy machine gun would definitely damage it or have a chance. And then once you get to MBA, even that's out. So there's a similar progression in the weapons. When you're at the low end, the focus is really on what we call archaic powder or gunpowder based weapons and lasers, because they're very efficient. Fluid guns are highly efficient, actually. So that's one thing to just note, that because of their capabilities, they're kind of like a Swiss Army knife of flamethrower, glue gun, like the opposite of a flamethrower, frost thrower, if you will, just freeze somebody solid, and a lot of other useful cartridges. So they're kind of a Swiss Army knife, and they do a lot of damage for their cost. The catch being, of course, they have refills that, you know, energy is usually findable just about anywhere. These are a little harder to get refills on a battlefield. There's not everybody carrying these around, but very useful on the low end. And
unsurprisingly, setting somebody in body armor on fire is quite effective.
Yeah, it still works. And then as you move up, you start getting into the pulse or plasma based weapons, the thunderbolt generators, which basically fry somebody with electricity. You've got your omega weapons, which accelerate a force field at Mach 5 at somebody. That usually leaves a mark. Disintegrators, my personal favorite. And a lot of other options. So you'll see all those in there. We've got some additions to the whole group and some interesting combinations of some things and some tweaks on some of the systems that have not been in prior editions. But as we looked at the way weapons work, it's like, well, why wouldn't we have one of these? So there's a few things sprinkled in there that are just flat out net new for older players who've been around for a little bit and are familiar with the Savage series. There's no longer a stop at D. There is now going to be a Savage E. So if you want a combo metal gun laser, that's the one you want.
Right on. So this particular book, you'll be able to mix and match kind of what you want on the fly to create new stuff?
From an armor perspective, yeah. That's always been in the rules, and that's been a key thing to bring in different customizations in the armor. For example, maybe you know you're going to be getting into fights with somebody like, you know, like Batman always prepares. Maybe you've got some intel that says, hey, we're likely to run into people using flamethrowers or web guns or goo guns with flame in them. Okay, well, let's get a coating that'll help resist the heat. Tony, you want to talk a little bit more on that, because that's really more your space?
Sure. Yeah, the armor, even in the core rules, is fully customizable. You can add hundreds of options to choose from sensor gear to communication gear to electronic warfare suites, agility and strength augmentation. We introduced some new ones in fully armored, including environmental sweeps, if you know you're going to be taking your armor in space or underwater or in other hostile environments. You can now modify the suit to better handle those conditions. You can pretty much tailor your suit to your heart's content with the constraints of space and budget.
Oh, there I am. I'm muted. That's good. At least once per show. how often is money an issue for the players? Is it going to be like a thing where they could say to whoever's sending them out on this mission, "Hey, I really need this suit of armor. You want this to succeed? You need me in this armor." Or is it one of those things where, you know, I can't really take that mission because I'm a little light from last week's paycheck. So, you know, as soon as I can pick up that armor, I'm good.
It really depends on the type of game. Oh, Kurt, go ahead.
I was going to say, it really kind of runs the gamut because, I mean, the system is designed from, you know, guys running out with battle rifles and flak jackets all the way up to the heavy weapons and that. So, if your GM is mean enough to throw you into something that needs mechanized battle armor, hopefully he's given you the option to get a hold of it in some way, shape, or form. You know, and that's always something too, because the system has set up, you know, you can get loans. You just, you know, sign your life away for a few more years for the company. You know, that's your added sign-on bonus. So it's kind of up to the GM how they're going to handle it. But you can do it pretty much any way they want to.
So does that mean that, you know, you don't pay that back that loan in time? You get that that space repo man to show up and
they just add another year. Yeah, they'll just add another year to your contract.
They may also put you on jobs that are even less pleasant than the ones you've been on.
Oh yeah, that time I had to clean the latrine for over a week. Yeah, that hurt.
We're going to put you on the front lines in the Arachnid assault. There's this world that really needs protected, and we think you're the perfect guy for the job.
So what's the sweet spot? What do you guys feel is the sweet spot for this Kickstarter? If somebody wants to pick up Battle Lords of the 23rd Century fully armored, right? What do you guys feel is the sweet spot, the best place for them to jump in and grab it and grab what they need to really get into this?
So the sweet spot's going to vary by the person and their interests. If somebody's been involved, then the sweet spot's probably going to look closer to like the $50 where they get the PDF and the print of the new book, fully armored, and then tailoring whatever they don't have. There's a lot of options they can pick from all our existing stock of current edition and prior edition stuff to add to that. For people who are starting new, they're going to want to look at both the $100 and the $150 levels, depending on how excited they are. If they're ready to jump in, like maybe they've played way in the past and they didn't realize we're back, then they may want to just jump in at $150 because they get all the things. And then if they're want to just kind of have the core rules and a really good assortment of toys, then $100 might work better. And again, at all levels, that's where we've given the flexibility. So we try to keep it three main levels. There's just PDF only is kind of the beginning, but PDF and book. And then after that, it's PDF book plus core rules, or then all the things. And then tailor as you want, much like armor.
Right on. So here's a question, just because I'm an army dude, you know, lots of mud, blood, and thunder, and, you know, wonder and all that jazz. What made you guys decide to go with Marpat on those t-shirts you're wearing?
That's kind of a funny story. So if you look at, say, Dave and I, we're probably, you can't really tell because we're sitting down, but we're like 5'5"-ish. Kurt the Viking over there is much larger. And we told the guy who does all our stretch goals has his own print shop. And we said, hey, we need something in digital camo. And it's got to be able to go from a size small to a size 5XL. What's available? And he was like, well, you get baby blue or yellow. And then he looked down and goes, no, wait, you just get yellow. So that was that's why we went with that. And initially we hated it. I got so much flack for that decision. Everyone's like, oh my God, these are hideous. And then we started going to cons, and it worked out spectacularly because no matter where we were, yeah, people were like, oh, there's the Battle Lords guys, they're over there.
Right on. Oh no, I was more wondering why you went with a Marine Corps pattern versus like you know, the new OCP camouflage that the Army's wearing or anything like that. Because you guys are mostly, from the look of it, it looks like it's based off the Marine Corps pattern. So I was just I was wondering if that had any bearing on your decision.
It really depends on what's available, honestly. Yeah. We've got people who run, like I said, the whole gamut of size from small to 5XL, and we have to have something that's available. And honestly, believe it or not, that shifts from when we start that Kickstarter to when we finish in terms of what's available, which is why if you read the fine print on our stretch goals and our add-ons, it says image subject to change, design subject to change. Because sometimes we can't even get the pattern that's on there. We tend to go for, you know, anything that looks quasi-futuristic. That's most of the digital camos. And I know the Army and the Marine guys hate this, but the navy blue does look pretty cool for most of the patterns.
Yeah, for that utility uniform that the Navy wears. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pretty distinguishable. I mean, you see a Navy guy, you pretty much know it's a Navy guy because he's all decked out in blue.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, we don't hate. They get us from one point to the other. It's fine. Of course, a couple of my Navy friends, if they're going to watch this, they're going to be like, bruh, I know where you live.
It's the coasties you can't stand, right?
Well, no. My brother-in-law is a coastie, so I try not to, you know, like I said, they got to keep the harbor clear so that way I can go swim.
Exactly.
But that kind of brings the question: Do you guys have a coastie version in the Battle Lords of the 23rd Century? Somebody protecting the orbits?
Yeah, there are actually one of the ships that that Dave designed for the game that players can get in the core rule books is a rescue cutter. So yeah, not only do we have a Coast Guard equivalent, but yeah, we actually have the ship available. And to be honest, it is probably one of the coolest small spacecraft you can get in the game. It's pretty kick-ass.
And now that you guys are talking about this, you know, I'm drawn back to last year when they had that that Coast Guard rapid deployment guy jump on a drug dealer submarine and pound open the hatch. I can totally picture a Ram Python guy doing that. Right? That means
many times. Absolutely. Oh, look, I found one. They just keep coming out. Or was that the same guy?
We actually had a Ram Python do that in-game, Ram Python player do that in-game to an Apache equivalent, where he had a displacement device, and he displaced into the gunner seat, crushing the gunner, and then used all of his strength and weight to slam the seat back, crushing the pilot, and then displaced out.
That's awesome. Yeah, Ram Pythons are probably the biggest memory I have from the mid-90s of playing that game. You know, there was always that one guy who was just going to try to get in a position to pull off a death noogie at some point during the game. You just died laughing every time. What's everybody's favorite these days? Like, is there one thing that when you sit down at the table, you're like, all right, so break out that arms and equipment guide because I'm going to get this, this, and this, and I'm playing this.
Well, I think less of a playing thing. Kurt, just jump in because this is the favorite piece of equipment I think we all enjoy the most.
Well, everybody's been we balanced them out a little bit more. So Ram Pythons are still deadly. But Scissorak are just nasty, and so are Eridani have gotten much more violent as well with their swords. That just kind of evened out the playing field. But we've been coming up with some different equipment. And so, you know, from the military, lowest cost bidder, lowest cost, you know, breaks, you know, we just chuck it out. So one of the devices that we've created for this new one is called the Crawler. And so it's an autonomous battlefield medic, and it looks like about a 300-pound leech or slug, crawls around, sucks you in. Okay? Now, it guarantees to return you to 95% combat efficiency. Of course.
But?
It's typical Battle Lords fashion. Gets you in there, cuts off your armor, starts repairing that, right? Well, you're damaged too, so, well, giving you anesthesia would reduce your combat efficiency. So we're just going to paralyze you. Do you want the pain inhibition chip? Great, we'll install it after the surgery.
Oh my God.
Well, yep. Wait, and then, more. You know, and it also recycles all used parts. So the last person in there was a Scissorac. Guess what? You might end up with Scissorac parts because they were still on the DNA scanner. So,
oh my God. So, yeah. I literally wrote this scene in my third novel. And I was like, just as you're describing this, I'm like, oh my God, that's awesome. That's fantastic.
And so when it gets you all back together, it puts you out, unparalyzes you, poops you out the end. And so it's one of the ones I enjoyed writing, and especially with the description of, you know, what can go wrong.
And you know what's going to be awesome? In 30 years, the tech over at like some giant defense firm is going to be like, well, you know, back in the day, I was watching the Banff podcast, and this dude was talking about the crawler. I had to invent it.
Exactly. Yeah,
I happen to know we're very popular with the guys at DARPA working third shift.
I was going to say, yeah, it'd be somebody at DARPA. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's how we got cell phones from Star Trek. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
I thought that was Area 51.
Yeah. Well, I'm not supposed to mention that.
Yeah. I love your guys' setting. It's sort of like heavy metal meets Generation Kill, which is a whole lot of fun. Wait, am I the only one who knows what Generation Kill is? No one else saw that show, did they?
I gotcha.
All right, cool.
At least somebody got it. So I think we need to, at some point after we're done playing Pew Pew on our next lunchtime beat 'em up, we got to run a game of Battlelords of the 23rd century.
I would love that. Yeah, would you guys be up for that? We're doing hour-long sessions on Mondays at lunchtime.
We have to check our schedules.
I'm a nurse, so I literally have no idea if I'm going to be on or not, and definitely would not have a time to run it at work. But you know, patients might not like that.
We could have to play.
Exactly.
We could do a nighttime game special for Battlelords. That
that might work a little better.
Yeah,
that'd be a little easier.
More thing. Yeah, easier to schedule. We could rebrand it as Banff Knights.
Just like Marvel, right?
Just like Marvel. Exactly.
Yeah, they're not using it. We got it.
So, well, sweet. So you guys have about 2 weeks left, and you're really going strong. Looks like Kickstarter is really working out well for you guys.
Yep, we put a lot of thought and energy into exactly what we need to do. Kind of lock in our quotes, lock in our contingency, figure out what we think we can do. If necessary, make adjustments to how many pages or artwork or whatever it is we feel we need to do to get it to a position where we know we can fund, because the goal is to just get out there, get it funded, and get moving. People want the product.
Hell yeah.
Yep. So what is next for Battlelords after this?
I got a long list. Tony?
The next one will probably be the Battlelords for the Savage World setting. We just finished writing the core rule book for that one, and we're working on the companion book to it, which we call the I think it's going to be called the Carnage Companion. But it basically, we adapted the Battlelords setting for Savage Worlds for people who wanted something a little lighter in terms of rule set. And we just pushed the over the top. Yeah, you know, we're like, well, if we're going to have less crunch, we're going to have more over the top. So it's even a little crazier than the original one. And that's probably
even crazier than the slug ambulance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my God, this writes itself. You could call it the Slambulance. Yes.
The best part is it talks to you, and Kurt's got this down. It talks to you in this real soothing, reassuring voice the whole time you're going through it, even though you know it's doing horrific things to you.
I understand you're paralyzed right now, but don't fear. We'll put this Scissorac right on. You'll be at least 96.2% effective. Just remember, if you go to scratch something, you do have claws now. Be careful what you scratch.
That's like that scene from that first Transformers movie back in the early 2000s. The dude's trying to call in an airstrike, and the guy's on the long distance company, and it's like, sir, yelling at me will not do anything to expedite your call.
Exactly. Your arm is at 37% combat efficiency. We will remove it and place it with the cybernetic.
Now, here's a question. Do you guys ever, stretch goals or anything like that, do you offer your own voices as, the voice of the tech? Because that'd be dope.
I don't know if any of us have that good of speaking voice.
The dulcet tones of Dave.
That's right.
Welcome to Banff at Night.
There it is. It sells itself.
Sweet. Well, hey, we will have the link for the Kickstarter in the show notes. I found it in like 5 seconds just by searching Fully Armored Battle Lords Kickstarter. Came in up in the first five results. 18 days left to go. You guys are 80% funded, so it's looking really good to knock out some of those stretch goals. Dog yep. tags, toe tags, etc. And it sounds like there's a Monty Hall option where if you hit a certain threshold, backers just get every PDF you guys have made.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Then I'll just add two just to kind of give people a sense of things for those who are new and listening and are not familiar with Battle Lords and our previous Kickstarters. We've shifted our approach to Kickstarters so that we've got things already in layout. So at this point, it's really add in some artwork. We'll be able to get a PDF beta version out there for everyone to start looking at very quickly. And then shift into full publication mode and get that out to the printer, which it's in Europe. So it's got to go there. Then it's got to get back on a boat, come back across, get through customs and all that fun stuff. But at least on the PDF side, we'll be able to get things out pretty quickly.
You guys are brave. As a small publisher myself, I am so scared of printing overseas these days.
You've got a pretty good printer we work with. They're very reputable, very easy to work with. They do actually a lot of work in the game industry. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Modiphius. Every book Modiphius prints comes out of this printer. So they know what they're doing.
Yeah, we like Modiphius. We have them on the show a few times. They're good guys. Mm-hmm. So, any closing thoughts?
Back that book.
If you're curious, the quick start rules, the free quick start rules are available to download. There's a link in the Kickstarter. There's a link on Drive-Thru RPG. There's also a free interior preview of the core rules. So if you want to see all that cool artwork, and we think we've got a lot of cool artwork in there, you can download the free interior PDF preview off of Drive-Thru RPG. There's also a link on the Kickstarter. Check it out.
Oh shoot, I wish I found that before the show. I would have been showing that off while we were talking. So all right, I'll make sure I have that link in the show notes then. So
also you guys should definitely put on the as a tagline either on your website or on the Kickstarter stuff, are you battle curious? You know, because that would drag in a lot of people.
I don't know how to respond to that, so I'm just going to end the podcast. Dave, Kurt, Tony, thank you very much. Walt, it's always a pleasure. And to all our listeners and viewers, we'll catch you next time on the BAM Podcast.
Peace.